that we're giving is not application, but is guiding principles. Now, once you give those guiding principles, the younger generation has to wrestle through the work of how to apply that, just as we wrestle through our own application. And that's very, very important. There's some truth about how to prepare for a job in my generation would be different in the generation coming up. There are certain things about planning for the future, how to go about planning for the future. It was different from when I came up than it is for Danica or for Hebrew. And so there are some beliefs and values that I have that I have to make sure I'm sticking with guiding principles. When I say guiding principles, what I'm talking about, there are some basic things that God has spoken that ought to be. And I'm not talking about Bible quote. I'm talking about a consensus from God's word that is transferable. Because the generation is coming up now, Marquise, Hebrew, you're coming up at a time where the future was less certain, less stable than it was for me. For me, they could tell me, and I applied it, and it worked. That go to school, get an education, get a college degree, get a job in that field, stay in that trade, get your pension, and then you retire. Those days are gone. And what I have to be careful about is telling those who are 30 and younger to do that. I mean, that's all I know, and that worked for me. So the tendency was to tell them to do that. And that's what's referred to as normalcy bias. That's normal for me, and I'm biased by what's normal for me. And so that's what I may tend to speak to you. But that would do more harm. We're living during a time that is very, very uncertain. So if we would raise our children the way I was raised, to give them the impression that they will be accepted by society if they follow those steps, I would be doing them more harm. I'm not saying that they can't make a way the way I did it. But I'm saying that the world that they are in is not the same as mine, and the outcome not necessarily going to be the same, or the percentage. Like, for instance, the world I came in, there were people, even people who hated me, believed in God. Even the Christmas holiday, the literature, the commercials, if they didn't say Jesus, they had an angel in it. Nowadays, it's just season greetings. It's just holiday. There's no reference to a manger. There's no reference to Christ. There's no reference to angels. There's no reference to shepherds. There's no reference to a king has come. And so we have a generation coming up without that to reinforce their beliefs. The world we're in is very secular. It's a godless world. There aren't any symbols for you can say, what's that? Well, that's an angel. Or what's the angel for? There's nothing there to prompt a discussion that would lead to God or lead to Christ. And so if we get caught up in the holiday festivities, the problem is we're going to have a lot of fun and fellowship. Like Jordan said, we're family. But if you're raised up from the perspective that Jesus had nothing to do with it, you'll think that that's normal and that's right and that's the way it should be. And that's wrong, because one of the guiding principles is that human beings did not create themselves. Another guiding principle is that the complexity in the human body didn't evolve from a single cell organism based on a mutation. That's the guiding principle. And if we didn't come from that, from where did we come? We were created, but there's nothing in our commercials, in our holidays, that speak to a creator. There's nothing to reinforce a belief in this creator. There's nothing to suggest how we should relate to this creator. That's the world that the 30 and unders are entering to, and that's the world they have to matriculate. But I wrote down a couple things, particularly for young men. I mean, my generation, young men were socialized to take charge, be assertive, be a leader, have your aggression under control, but don't be afraid to be aggressive. Today, there are incentives for being effeminate. Yep. You look at the commercials, the type of African-American males that seem to be in high-profile, positive positions are kind of like that. And I was raised in the world, I can go and get a job, an interview, and I can start that day. The world you're coming into, there's drug testing. You got to pass the drug test. And so you got to think about how is it that you're going to live and be able to provide for yourself. And you might use drugs. You might just smoke marijuana. That's something you have to consider. In my generation, I didn't have to consider. I could smoke marijuana and then go and get a job. It's a different world. In this world, you also had to do, I had to do the credit background check. So you, 30 and under, you have to consider how you want to live today, whereby you will be able to pass a credit check in order to get a job and be employable. Or you can say, I don't care. I'm just doing my own thing. And then you got to worry about how are you going to do your own thing. Social Security is going to die. You won't have a job to collect a pension. How are you going to do your own thing without revenue? You're going to hustle or hit somebody over the head. Well, your perfect hustle is going to only give you so much. Hit somebody over the head. They already have privatized some prisons at the state level. And what that means is that when they privatize, that company can loan its prisoners to do work for corporations without paying the prisoners. It's called slavery. So the world we live in has situated itself where the vices that African Americans participate in has situated itself that it can exploit us because we participate in those vices. You know, like a felony check to get a job. Do you have any felonies on your record? You can't vote. You only have a voice. And so you come into a world that's set up to exploit you based on your vices. That's what the world I came up in. You can't look at me and say things working well for pastor, so you know I'm gonna be all right. Work well for me. You know, today we have ineffective schools. When I was coming up from the elementary school, you know, they had integration, so they made sure the schools had money because they wanted their white children to be educated. I happen to be a collateral benefit. But today, with predominantly black school systems, they don't feel that they have to provide the money. And yes, the school can have excellent teachers, but if you don't provide those teachers with the resources, the results are going to be ineffective in terms of teaching. Then there's unemployment. Then we have the rise in white supremacy group, KKK, Making America Great Again. In the White House, in the Senate, and in the House of Representatives. And that's the world you're coming up into. We have an economically draconian business and local government. And this society designed, what I mean, how does the local government business do that? They do it by, they got a fee for everything. They got, the bank has so many new fees, but they're trying to get as much money as possible out of regular folk. We got corrupt local and state government. We already know about the water crisis and the state's guilt involved in the water crisis in Flint. And then we have the demolition scandal in Detroit, politicians. I'm just citing all these things to say that this world is more subtly and covertly hateful towards African Americans and actually towards their own. If they can squeeze a dollar out of their mama, they will. That's the world you're coming up to. So I can't use those who are 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90. We can't use our own applications and what worked for us to try and help this generation. Because you will fail and they will fail and you will fail them. But there are some basic things that we can do. And what I want to do, I want to look at the story of Saul, who became king. And his kingdom, Israel, kind of became corrupt because he was corrupt. And what I want to look at is what kind of preparation did God see or sought in the upcoming youth to replace this king who was corrupt. And the guiding principle is that the same criteria that God used to select Saul's replacement, some very basic things that we need to make sure that every young male and female has. We can't give them, you gotta go get your bachelor's and master's. We got to step away from how things worked for us and send our children after that, only to be exploited. How'd they get exploited? Student loans. Come out with $80,000 worth of debt. I used to be able to go to college and get a job and pay my tuition. The way we came up, this world has situated itself where they can exploit that for economic gain. So we have to be careful about how we instruct our youth. So if you can turn to 1 Samuel 15, I want to talk about King Saul. It wasn't God's choice to make Saul the king. The people rose up and they just demanded a king. They went to the prophet Samuel, said, we need a king like other nations around us. So Samuel lamented, he didn't want to do it. Basically, God said, okay, Samuel, they didn't reject you, they rejected me. We're going to go through this. We're going to let this nation have the king they've been crying for. It's not any different than today. We elected the kind of leader that represents America. Now, one of the things that God had been doing with Samuel, at that time, there weren't any kings in Israel. There were just prophets, and God spoke through the prophets to the people. And so people wanted a king. God didn't change the way he worked. He still spoke to the prophet, but this time to the king and to the people. And so in 1 Samuel 15, the prophet Samuel says this to the king Saul. I am the one that the Lord sent to anoint you king over his people. So listen now to the message from the Lord. This is what the Lord Almighty says. I will punish the Amalekites for what they did to Israel when they waylaid them as they came out of Egypt. Now go attack the Amalekites and totally destroy all that belongs to them. Do not spare them. Put to death men and women, children, infants, cattle, sheep, camels, and donkeys. King Saul got his army, got his troops mounted up, headed out that way, and he attacked the Amalekites. But in verse 9, it says, but Saul and the army spared Agag and the best of the sheep and cattle and the fat calves and lambs, everything that was good. These they were unwilling to destroy completely, but everything that was despised and weak, they totally destroyed. So God said, destroy everything. And they said, that's kind of sharp right there. I like to wear them shoes. Them shoes over there, we can destroy those. They ain't worth nothing anyway. That's the mindset. The stuff they thought was tight, even the Lord said destroy it all, the tight stuff they kept to themselves. And so he spared the king, he kept the best cattle and lamb and all that stuff. And in verse 10, it said, the word of the Lord came to Samuel, I regret that I have made Saul king because he has turned away from me and has not carried out my instructions. Samuel was angry, and he cried out to the Lord all that night. So Israel cried for a king, and they got the king they cried for. But it was a king that did not obey God, that was rebellious against God. That's the king they had. And so God revealed this to the prophet Samuel. So Samuel went out and confronted Saul, but he was very subtle with it. In verse 13, it says, when Samuel reached him, Saul said, the Lord bless you. I have carried out the Lord's instruction. Some people think that you can kind of do what you want to do. Something looks sharp. It's okay. God's not real. He doesn't walk the earth. If I disobey him, it doesn't mean anything. But Samuel said, what then is the bleating of sheep in my ear? And what is the lowing of cattle that I hear? God really said destroy everything. Why am I still hearing sheep and cows? And so Saul goes to some rationalization and is trying to explain what had happened, blah, 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 blah. And verse 16, Samuel said, enough. Let me tell you what the Lord said to me last night. In verse 17, although you were once small in your own eyes, in other words, you really didn't think that much of yourself, did you not become the head of the tribes of Israel? Otherwise, he said, God's the one to elevate you. You didn't have that much confidence. God elevates you. The Lord anointed you king of Israel and sent you on a mission saying, go and completely destroy this wicked people. Wage war against them until you wiped them out. Why did you not obey the Lord? Why did You pounce on the plunder and do evil in the sight of the Lord. Listen to Saul. But I did obey the Lord. I went on the mission the Lord assigned me. I completely destroyed the Amalekites. I brought back Agag, their king. The soldiers took sheep and cattle from the plunder, the best of what was devoted to God, in order to sacrifice them to the Lord your God in Gilgal. So in other words, he said he did what the Lord told him to do, which was a lie. Sometimes we could try to manipulate things to justify what we wanted to do, and we end up coming up with some godly thing ourselves to say, this is what we're going to do for God with it. He said that we are going to sacrifice these things to the Lord. But God never asked them to do that. That's the difference between our good and God's good. Sometimes we think that if we're doing something good for God, it should be allowed. But we have to do God's good, not our good. Because God's good is good. And when our good is contrary to what God said, it doesn't make any difference. It's not good. And that's what Samuel tells him. In verse 22, it says, does the Lord delight in burnt offerings and sacrifice as much as in obeying the Lord? Excellent question. What does God like? Does he like the offerings we give him? Or does he like for us to obey him? To obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed is better than fatted rams. And this is where we can kind of learn that when we are in a country who has elected a leader that's godless, one of the things that we want to make sure of that we are godly, that we maintain our faith, even though the commercials don't have angels, Jesus, any reference to Jesus, even though Jesus has been dismissed from the classroom, the boardroom, the courtroom, we're going to maintain our faith. That's one of the key things we need to extract from this. How to survive in this future. One guiding principle that worked for me and is going to work for you is to maintain your faith in Jesus Christ. Now, the way I apply that is going to be different than the way you apply it. You're going to have to find out how to apply it. It's kind of like one of the guiding principles of the head of the household throughout all of history is that we have to keep our homes heated for warmth. That's a guiding principle for every head of household. 2,000 years ago, that meant chopping wood. Well, maybe not that long, but that meant chopping wood and rubbing sticks together to make a fire to heat the home. Today it means buying a 50,000 BTU furnace. The applications are different, but the guiding principle is the same. I'm heating my home and keeping my family warm just as they did during Jesus' time, just as they did during Moses' time. Households have always kept the family warm. How they did it varied. So when elders give you a guiding principle, you got to embrace that principle, but you got to apply it in a way that maintains the integrity of that principle for yourself. And one of the things that's the guiding principle is that obedience is better than sacrifice. Don't say you're giving something to God and feeling good about it when God prefers that you simply obey what he has done. Verse 23, for rebellion is like the sin of divination. That's witchcraft. And arrogance is like the evil of idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has rejected you as king. Wow. God rejected Saul as king. He no longer gave Saul favor. That not only hurt Saul, but it hurt Samuel, the prophet. In verse 24, Saul says, I have sinned and violated the Lord's command and your instructions. I was afraid of the men, so I gave in to them. Now I beg you, forgive me my sins. Come back with me so that I may worship the Lord. He's begging Samuel to go back with him so he can worship the Lord. He says, forgive me. It didn't bother him until he got caught. Everybody asks for forgiveness after they get caught. Everybody finds Jesus after they get arrested and locked up. How genuine they are, only God knows. Samuel turned to leave, and Saul caught him by the hem of his robe, and it tore. Samuel said to him, the Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today and has given it to one of your neighbors, one better than you. So let's talk about that. Has given it to one that's better than you. That's you, Hebrew, Marquise. That's you. So what criteria is God looking for in the upcoming youth to prepare them to lead the kingdom? Was it the same criteria that was used to elect Saul, or was it something different? Did God use a specific criteria, or did he look for someone who simply embraced the guiding principles? See, and that's key. There's no way that I can prepare anyone for the world tomorrow, specifically to make it, to matriculate. But I can prepare them to be true to the guiding principles, because since they are guiding principles, they will guide them to where God wants them. And then God will give them specific instructions. You know, my parents never told me to major in IT or teach Bible study or be a pastor. But there were some basic principles about work, about respect, basic principles about being responsible that they did give me. Those things led me to IT, led me to being a pastor, led me to being a teacher. And so what I want to do, I want to take a closer look. In the next chapter, it says, Samuel anoints David. Samuel was sad about Saul being rejected. In verse 1, as we said, the Lord asked Samuel, "How long will you mourn Saul since I have rejected him as king over Israel?" He tells him, "Fill your horn with oil and be on your way. I am sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem. I have chosen one of his sons to be king." See, God knows specifically where to go and where to send, in this case, the prophet to reach the individual who he wants. Question is, how was that individual prepared to take on that future responsibility? That's what I want you to focus in. Now, it's one thing for God to know who he wants, but as parents and as leaders, how do we prepare individuals to be qualified? So basically Samuel says, okay, you know, if I go in somebody's house and start looking for the next king in Israel, Saul's going to try to kill me. You know, you rejected him, but he's still got the power. He's still got the army's influence. So the Lord tells Samuel, just go to Bethlehem and just have a sacrifice and invite people to the sacrifice, but make sure you invite the household of Jesse to the sacrifice. That way, people don't know you're just going to Jesse's house. So when it says in verse 5 of chapter 6, 1 Samuel 16, Samuel had met the elders of the town, who was afraid of him. He told him, they just came to sacrifice to the Lord. I want you to get yourself ready, consecrate yourselves, and come to the sacrifice. And he consecrated, which means he devoted Jesse's house, which means y'all got to be there, made it mandatory. And Jesse and his sons come out, be invited. And so when they arrived, Samuel looked at Jesse's sons. In verse 6, he looked at Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord." You look at Eliab, so that got to be the dude. Definitely. Now, Samuel was enormously biased. Samuel was looking at the criteria that was typically appealing at that time for a king. It says that he considered Eliab, and he just knew that he was the one. Verse 7 reveals a little bit about the criteria that Samuel was thinking in his head, even though he didn't speak it. God knew he was thinking in his head. That's why God said it in verse 7. Look at what the Lord tells Samuel about Eliab in verse 7. "But the Lord said to Samuel, do not consider the appearance or his height." Okay, he looked handsome, and he was tall. He says, "For I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outer appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." So God calls out the appearance and height. Why did he call that out? Because in the mind of Samuel, that's what you want as a king. Well, how do we know that's what you're looking for as a king? Go back to 1 Samuel chapter 9, and we'll see there a little bit about Saul. He had prototypical king traits. In verse 2, 1 Samuel chapter 9, verse 2, it says, Kish had a son named Saul. He was handsome and a young man as could be found anywhere in Israel. He was a head taller than anyone else. So he was handsome, he was tall. So you can see why God called this out in his rebuke of Samuel. Samuel says, certainly, this is the anointed one. Then the Lord says, I don't look at his appearance or his height. He calls it out because that's what Samuel had in mind, the appearance and height. And this is why I'm harping on this. We tend to tell the younger generation what qualities, what virtues they need to have to make it in this world. But we're basing it on our world. See, Samuel's criteria was based upon the world of the past. See, when God does something, that's why it's important that we obey. That's why obedience is more important. Because when God does something, he does something for his reasons, and which may not be the same as why we would choose something. Samuel would think that, wait, everybody knows the tall and handsome dude is king. This has got to be it. That's based upon human choice. That's why it's so important that we simply obey God and not try to think for God. And so what we have here, back to 1 Samuel 16, verse 7, God, he says, I don't look at the appearance or the height, for I rejected him. I don't look at the things that people look at. People look at the outer appearance. I look at the person's heart. So he calls Jesse's other son, Abinadab, and had him pass in front of Samuel. But Samuel said, the Lord has not chosen this one either. Jesse then had Shammah pass by. But Samuel said, nor has the Lord chosen this one. Jesse had seven of his sons pass before Samuel. But Samuel said to him, the Lord has not chosen these. So he asked Jesse, are these all the sons you have? Still the youngest, Jesse answered. He is tending the sheep. Samuel said, send for him. We will not sit down until he arrives. So he sent for him, and he had him brought in. He was glowing with health. He was fit. He had a fine appearance, and he was handsome. Lord didn't say you couldn't be handsome. The Lord, glad to say, I don't look at the outer stuff. The Lord said, rise and anoint him. This is the one. So Samuel took the horn of the oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David. Samuel then went to Ramah. That was King David. He was a little boy, ruddy, dirty. Why? Because his job is watching sheep. So well, I would say this. So far, some of the criteria be considered teens, that you have a good work ethic. You don't have to worry about fitting in and meeting the criteria of your older brothers or the previous generation. You simply have to be responsible. But that's not all David had. David also had faith, and David had courage. He was confident. He was aggressive. He was an alpha male type confident person. In other words, he had power under control. He wasn't afraid of anything. He didn't initiate aggression, but he was down for it. What we need to look at when you start talking about preparing for the future, don't think that you need to fit this effeminate stereotype that the society tries to squeeze you into. But you need to be confident. If you find yourself having to protest, to fight, to challenge society, you need to be ready to do that. If you have to go against the king, you have to be ready to do that, because David did all that. You can't mouse out, but you have to know when to be humble. You have to be able to give a person a pass because you realize you can destroy them, and they're really trying to fake like their heart, but you're just going to laugh and give them a pass because you know they don't have it. Or they could be someone who ain't faking, who want to challenge you. And you have to really get in their face. So when we start talking about in the future, our future is unknown. You may have to lead a protest. You may have to lead an underground organization. Or you may